information is free.
The law?
There is hope.
When ignorance is converted into knowledge,
we care.
Appear to border
it shows.
The law?
The country.
You will remember nothing you have seen or heard here.
Whether he went on with the diary, or whether he did not cooperate, it made no difference. The thought police would get him just the same.
Rearrange your synapses. Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to the 225th episode from Media Monarchy. My name is James Evan Pilato, your host and webmaster of the site and show MediaMonarchy.com, your source for alternative news, politics, conspiracies, and cover-ups. This week, the Boho Grove Bizzle and the Netflix News of the World. Fat children food fight and the Obama Depression dollar store, plus Ron, Webster, Keith, and Eddie, Packaid, PDX Ice, Midnight Confessions, Magnetic Boy, and the CNN terror fraud. All that and so much more is here for you, July 15th, 2011, episode 225 from MediaMonarchy.com.
2011, atomic teenage riot, and some people ask if it's still necessary. Well, very much so. While some people still live in the illusion of a colorless society because of Barack Obama, when in fact, racism still eats the beating hearts of men every day, and the new slavery is incarceration in total effect, with even more black males in prison now than in 1850.
Is it worth the creation of a black hole that sucks up our time, creativity, and friendships? Some believe the everyday mobile device is as powerful as a nuclear hand grenade when it comes to starting a revolution. The ideologies behind the type of thinking aren't exactly solid, my friend. When the authorities catch up with us, and they will, not such a good idea to leave traces and expose your whole network at once.
When we look at the future of control technologies, the walk in the park will be a walk in the dark if we don't act. Spy on your neighbors, phone in a threat. Don't question yourself, you're a hero. Imagine attacks others might carry out. Look at what our society has become. Anyone can get tortured, anyone can disappear. Isn't this terror?
Capitalism, you're a little fat man in a big expensive car hanging over a ravine here. Rearrange your synapses.
Rearrange!
Change Your Synapses. That's brand new music from the German outfit known as Atari Teenage Riot. Their brand new record is called Is This Hyper Real? Calling into question all that we do in our quote-unquote social networks. Sloganeering over drilling abrasive beats. Their record label is called Digital Hardcore Records, and Digital Hardcore also acts as the subgenre name, if you will. And I saw them, and I was trying to look up and figure out exactly when it was, because I can't quite remember, but it looks like they have a Live in Philly release from December 97, so I'm going to guess that I saw them in D.C. on that December 97. Their first American tour. And we hooked it up through my radio station at the time, WSHC, in Shepherdstown, West Virginia, where I was a DJ starting in 95 and was the music director for years. Me and my man Jonathan got put on the guest list, went to go see Atari Teenage Riot, interviewed them, met them backstage, hung out with them. And in getting autographs, I had brought the Not Your Business EP, which was put out here in the States by Grand Royal, which was the Beastie Boys label. That label's now defunct. But in getting them to sign that record, they were even looking at it going, oh, they had never seen it before because it was the U.S. release. One of those members has actually died of a drug overdose since then, Carl Crack. So in the East Coast media storage, I've got that EP autographed by all of them on a label that doesn't exist anymore. But I digress, my friends. You don't want to hear all my music geekery, just little bits at a time. My name is James Evan Pilato, your host and webmaster of MediaMonarchy.com. This is episode 225, and it's July 15th, 2011. Happy birthday, Eric. And we are broadcasting live, as always, from the Portland Radio Authority, praradio.org. Having a little bit of technical difficulties, but that is not going to stop the Media Monarchy. With the power of one extra cable and ustream.tv/mediamonarchy-com, we're rerouting the signal. Huge thanks to the folks at zeropointradio.com. They're a huge help to Media Monarchy, spreading the word. They blasted out simulcast worldwide on zeropointradio.com and also AM and FM in Casper, Wyoming. Please support those guys. And the worldwide home of free speech, revereradio.net. Those are all the ways you can hear the show live right now. And we always want to thank radio23.org for the extra hosting, which I'm a little behind on uploading the shows. But they'll always be on radioforall.net and archive.org. And you can connect up on Face, Space, and Twitter Tube. And as we mentioned last week, Tumblr, mediamonarchy.tumblr.com. Just another way to build out the redundancy and catch new people in all the little social network circles. Get in touch with me, mediamonarchy@gmail.com. From the fine folks at Google. And we're on Skype. Media Monarchy is the keyword and username on all those accounts and any of those accounts. Big thanks to Sarah in San Diego for her donation. Your thank you package has already been sent and will be arriving shortly. So in speaking of making contact, MediaMonarchy@gmail.com. We also have the P.O. Box. 12165. Portland, Oregon, 97212, and all of that is on the top right of the page, as is the donate button. And I just want to throw out the mention that, of course, we do get lots of email and news tips and correspondence, and I'm not able to respond to all of it, so don't get mad if I don't, but it's all greatly appreciated, so please don't stop. Is that all our business to take care of as I double check my notes here? I think so. Let's glance at the aforementioned Google News.
where 1 hour ago, according to CBS News, Obama says Americans back me on the debt deal. Yes, the debt charade goes on. Meanwhile, Hulk Hogan body slams the junkyard dog, because it's all staged. Carmageddon, 405 freeway could reopen early if work goes smoothly. And of course, the Harry Potter movie. We will make a theological reference to that a little bit later in the show, and we'll of course keep the breaking news window open just in case something happens. We can tell it to you here first and get it on the record. As long as I'm geeking out and I just said on the record, and it kind of reminded me, that was the name of one of my early radio shows that I did with my man Joey back on WSHC, where we played nothing but vinyl. But here and now, episode 80 of NewWorldNextWeek.com is published, the weekly series between myself and my man James Corbett of CorbettReport.com. 9/11 Superpilots, Dear Netflix, and self-checkout stores. Those are the three big stories on the most recent episode of NewWorldNextWeek.com. I love doing it. It's the 80th episode. I think there's some 15-plus hours of that show. And I did hear from a listener or a viewer who saw the show and first heard about Media Monarchy by seeing New World Next Week on Sky Satellite Channel 201, thanks to ParadigmShift.tv. That's amazing. I love it. So, speaking of Corbett Report, episode 194, The Cloud Cometh. We are increasingly being encouraged to put our data on the cloud. But what does it mean that our information is being handled by third-party companies? Episode 194, The Cloud Cometh, examines what the cloud really is and what it means for average internet users. The latest Corbett Report videos, the Sunday update, done in conjunction with globalresearch.ca. Drone wars, U.S. ramping up unmanned airstrikes and domestic surveillance. Let's see, all those years of video game programming is paying off. So young boys can sit in a room and press buttons and not feel bad about the farmers and family members and children that they're killing 40,000 miles away. James also put up the video of his recent interview with the madman of InfoWars, Alex Jones, on the dangers of the cloud. Some of that interview you can hear excerpted in episode 194, but you can watch the entire interview. And the latest audio-only interviews from Bob Chapman and Mahdi Darius Nazimroya. All that and so much more from the hardest working man in alternative media, James Corbett of CorbettReport.com. Now taking a much deserved break for the summer. We're only halfway through this year, and I can only imagine what kind of trying year James has already had with the death of his mother and the Fukushima crisis. All those things and so much more make your support, monetary or otherwise, that much more important to CorbettReport.com. Wednesday was a busy day for Media Monarchy. We taped that most recent episode of NewWorldNextWeek.com. And then a couple hours later, we made our monthly appearance on The Bob Tuscan Show, thanks to OracleBroadcasting.com. This month's appearance covers The Culture of Fear and More Conscious Music Mixtapes, both of those stories we did cover last week on episode 224 about the latest Thievery Corporation album. Oh yeah, and I was going to mention, when I was talking about me and Jonathan going to see Atari Teenage Riot in 97, Jonathan, photographer, music maker, tech guy, all-around cool guy, One of his photos is the cover of an early Thievery Corporation single. Because, again, all DC proximity connected. So anyway, Bob Tuscan and I go over the new Thievery Corporation Culture of Fear album, play a little bit of that title track, and also got into mentioning my latest mixtape. We also get into the return to Bohemian Grove, grocery stores, and much more. All those other things, yes, we touched on New Orleans last week. Yes, they are contained in all the sites in the Media Monarchy Kingdom that we will go over entirely on this episode 225. So the audio is up, and again, if you subscribe, feeds.feedburner.com/Media Monarchy, shove that up your Google Reader, or just manually put that in to iTunes. You'll get everything if you do it that way. You get the PDFs, the movies, the MP3s. So my audio edit of my latest appearance on the Bob Tuscan Show already fed out to you if you're a subscriber. And the videos are coming soon. The editing of those will have to wait a little bit, and they'll be on, hopefully, youtube.com/Media Monarchy this weekend. A quick mention of the latest episode from RemedyRadio.com, Why School Sucks and Should Be Destroyed. Episode 7 from RemedyRadio.com talks to Brett Vinant of the School Sucks Project and podcast, discussing the nature of the compulsory school system and why it shouldn't be reformed, but scrapped and replaced with something completely different. Posted alongside this as a related video update was Jan Irvin of Gnostic Media being interviewed by Alex Jones, talking mind control and the dumbing down of society. It's a pretty excellent / contentious interview, and I recommend you check it out. And you may recall some of the previous episodes of Remedy Radio that we discussed with Erica Goldson, who gave the viral video valedictory speech, and also Becoming Your Own Media Monarchy, episode 5, featuring yours truly. So fill your prescription with a subscription to RemedyRadio.com. But back to that busy Wednesday where we did New World Next Week and the Bob Tuscan Show. And then, on short notice, I got a phone call from the one and only Clyde Lewis of GroundZeroMedia.org. We knew that the Bohemian Grove enclave was to begin today, July 15th, and it is. And you can bet that all the wealthy elite males are gathering in the California Redwoods, and we'll get into that in just a moment. But Clyde called me up and asked me to come on the show, and I, of course, said, absolutely. That audio is coming soon, and there may also be video to go along with it, if I have the time and the computing power. But all the latest articles and episodes always get linked up on Media Monarchy. And of course, you can check out Clyde Lewis live or subscribe to the podcast. He's on KXL weeknights from 9 to midnight here in Portland, Oregon, 101.1 FM, but worldwide on KXL.com. Monday got into Bigfoot crossing. Tuesday got into Citing the Calls, Fuzzy Logic, Alien Graves, and Chinese Lanterns. And then Wednesday, it was the Cremation of Care with myself. And then it also featured Doc Marquis. And last night's episode, Thursday, Security Matter X, featured guest Ken Thomas. All that, so much more from Clyde Lewis of GroundZeroMedia.org. And again, watch out for my audio appearance on that show discussing the Bohemian Grove. So that sets the stage for us. Gearing up at the Bohemian Grove, the Press Democrat out of Sonoma County, California, where a lot of this takes place, the Bohemian Grove, they have been covering this story, and I think we can say and compare it to other such levels that they can't deny the Bohemian Grove exists anymore. They can't deny the Bilderberg meetings exist anymore. And that is through, one, the hard and brave and thankless work that all the folks did in the decades before we had the internet, which makes it easy for kids like myself to come along and become fairly versed in something that you want to dive into. But the alternative media has spread the word about false flag terror, fractional reserve banking, secret elites, and their eugenics-obsessed ideals. So this newspaper, the Press Democrat, has been putting up several different articles, and some of those are linked in, and as you may know, and I hope you appreciate, adding in all the extra links. I try and do a little bit of extra work and give you contextual, subtextual information so that you can go deeper if you so desire. It originates from the Press Democrat, but the link and the hat tip goes to the Bohemian Grove blog, .wordpress.com. They don't buy into any of the occult trappings of the Bohemian Grove. They're angry enough that it's elites getting together in secret to steer this ship of state in defiance of certain pesky laws and things. So Clyde called me up Wednesday because Anonymous, the group connected to WikiLeaks and Assange and fighting for that transparency and not getting into WikiLeaks and Assange or any of that now. But most of their actions have been web-related. But Wednesday morning, Anonymous released a message. And we'll call it hashtag Operation Bohemian Grove begins as the elites gather in the California Redwoods for the 133rd Annual Secret Enclave.
On July 13, 2011, a 138th annual encampment will occur at the Bohemian Grove in Monterio, California. For 2 weeks in mid-July, the Bohemian Grove plays host to some of the most powerful men in the world. During this time, the men are entertained by a number of plays and bizarre ritualistic ceremonies, the most notable being the cremation of care. The cremation of care culminates in the casting away of one's cares, with the druidic burning of an effigy on an altar. Former German Chancellor Helmut Schmidt, a frequent attendee of Bohemian Grove, once detailed the secret establishments that run the world. These include the Trilateral Commission, the Council on Foreign Relations, the Bilderberg Group, and Bohemian Grove. He also described the Bohemian Grove as a great hideaway and a wonderful place to spend time with the Rockefellers, a place to discuss world government and steering society. Members of Bohemian Grove have included William Howard Taft, the United States President, Herbert Hoover, the United States President, Dwight D. Eisenhower, later became President, Ronald Reagan, later became President, Richard Nixon, later became President, George Herbert Walker Bush, later became President, Bill Clinton, later became President, George Walker Bush, later became President. The global banking cartel's central planning force, the Federal Reserve, is run by members of Bohemian Grove. Alan Greenspan was at Bohemian Grove 1 month before he was appointed as the Federal Reserve Chairman. Important political and business deals are discussed and established at the Bohemian Grove, which is a direct violation of law in most concerned countries. The Bohemian Grove was the birthplace of the Manhattan Project, which resulted in the development of the first atomic bomb. The ideas, concepts, and plans that are devised at Bohemian Grove result in crimes against humanity. These secret meetings must no longer be tolerated. These secret meetings must become transparent. We must no longer allow our government officials to meet with CEOs of large companies, military contractors, oil companies, and too big to fail banks without the direct consent of the people, without transparency. We must unite and restore the law as it was meant to be and hold the criminals accountable for their actions. At this time, we are launching Operation Bohemian Grove. Engaged. We are watching. Expect us.
San Francisco Giants boss Bill Newcomb and Vaughn Walker, the retired federal judge who threw out Proposition 8, will be among the featured speakers at the Bohemian Grove encampment of rich and powerful men beginning today, Friday, July 15, 2011, in Monterey, California. Also scheduled to present Lakeside Talks during the 17-day Bohemian Grove retreat are Daniel Yergin, the Pulitzer Prize-winning author and energy expert, Willie Smits, a conservationist and defender of Borneo's orangutans, and former Secretaries of State George Shultz and James Baker. The talks, presented beside a small lake ringed by towering redwoods, are a daily highlight of the summer encampment held by the San Francisco-based Bohemian Club since 1878. Like everything else that transpires within the Bohemians' 2,700-acre enclave along the Russian River, the talks are secret, to the chagrin of critics who contend the plutocrats and politicians are either plotting the future of the free world, engaging in nefarious ceremonies, or both. Nothing like that actually happens, according to Matt Agaro, the club's general manager. It's a group of guys out in the woods having a good time, he says. Even the protesters who used to collect at the Grove's gate have pretty much given up, although there have been recent internet rumblings of such an effort. It wouldn't surprise me to see a few people show up, he said. Last year, the protest turned out to be one guy. What the Bohemians do most is hang around in the 119 camps among the redwoods, consume alcohol, and eat three meals a day at a large outdoor dining circle. Diversions include entertainment and the Lakeside Talks, which in past years have featured not-yet-President Richard Nixon in 67 and not-yet-President George H.W. Bush, who would later introduce his son Georgie to the power brokers in 95. Also on the Lakeside Talks list this year are documentary filmmaker Ken Burns, former Wyoming Senator Alan Simpson, and the ambassadors from Australia and Mexico. G. William Domhoff, a UC Santa Cruz sociologist who wrote a book about the Grove, described it as an Elks Club for the rich, a fraternity party in the woods. The 2,400 men expected to attend this summer include corporate titans, but also musicians and artists, local business leaders, and even ordinary folk like school teachers. The Bohemian Club's motto for more than 130 years has been, "Weaving spiders come not here." And Agaro said members tend to stick to the ban on talking business. It's all about fellowship, he said. The encampment also gives the area an economic lift as private jets swoop into the Charles M. Schultz Sonoma County Airport and the campers spend money at local stores. The Grove hires a large staff, about 750 people this year, ranging in age from 16 to more than 70 and working for $10.50 to $17 an hour, Agaro said. About 60% of the workers are high school and college-age youths, many of them getting their first job experience. A former Santa Rosa resident who bussed tables at the Grove several years ago said she was restricted, due to her gender, to the dining area. The only Bohemian she recognized was actor-director Clint Eastwood, whom she served orange juice. It was exciting, she said. Gearing up at the Bohemian Grove, that article that I just read for you in its entirety, and I think the interesting parts jump out at you without my hokey inflections. There are so many things to get into, and we got into it pretty deeply on Ground Zero. So again, that audio is coming soon, and I won't rehash all the things that we get into there. We do link up at the bottom a couple of flashbacks. We have, of course, been following the Bohemian Grove for a long time on Media Monarchy. The oldest one I provide for you, the Gentleman's Club for the Rich and Famous, goes back to June of 2007 on this site. April 2009, Bohemian Tragedy, Vanity Fair editor arrested sneaking into the Bohemian Grove. And a fun one from October 2008, Poppy Bush rocks his Bohemian Grove ball cap. And we do have one comment from NorCalTruth.org, setting the record straight, again from the Bohemian Grove blog. I suppose I'd have to say, like pretty much every other thing that we cover, we leave it up to you. I'm not trying to make up your mind for you. I'm not trying to tell you I have all the answers. And if we reference our opening song again about rearranging your synapses, question everything they do and that you do. I think Operation Bohemian Grove sets the transition perfectly to get our couple of posts on holyhexes.com. And our first comes from National Petroleum Radio. FBI invites controversial Westboro Baptist to counter-terror program. The West Baptist Church is infamous for picketing soldiers' funerals with signs like "Thank God for Dead Soldiers" and "God Hates the USA." Yet the FBI recently invited leaders of the Fundamentalist Church to the Quantico Marine Base in Virginia to talk to FBI agents as part of the Bureau's counter-terror training program. But after four sessions this spring, the FBI canceled the arrangement amid criticism from inside the Bureau, while church leaders claimed that they had been misled. The church group, led by Pastor Fred Phelps and based in Topeka, Kansas, says its protests are intended to tell the world that God is punishing the U.S. military for America's tolerance of homosexuality. The pastor claims to be the prophet of God's wrath. Is that P-R-O-F-I-T or P-R-O-P-H-E-T? The FBI first invited the church group to address the FBI's law enforcement training classes back in 2008, and initially there were no apparent problems, but the most recent sessions, including three at Quantico and one in Manistee, Virginia, stirred up controversy. More on this story from TheBlaze.com and from InfoWars. Without diving too much into it, this to me brings up and rings up the specter of this homegrown terror. And you know that groups are infiltrated and provocateured and steered. COINTELPRO is alive and well, the counterintelligence program run by the somewhat secret enforcement arm of the police state, run by international banksters and gangsters, interlocked through blood and family and corporations and corporatism. Problem, reaction, solution. Our other post on holyhexes.com is the July 14th pop culture news purge, Abuse, Atheists, and Hip Hop Masons. The first from Reuters, German Catholic Church opens sexual abuse files, some of them dating back as far as World War II. Germany's Roman Catholic Church will open its files to independent investigators into a sexual abuse crisis, allowing a search as far back as 1945, a bishop announced Wednesday. Nine German dioceses will open records dating back to the end of World War II, while the 18 others will do so for the period 2000 to 2010. We want to track down the truth that may be lying undiscovered in the files of previous decades. But from The Guardian, Vatican approach to child abuse in Ireland absolutely disgraceful, says Prime Minister. Believe even Morrissey makes reference to that on his most recent album, Swords. Children in Pieces. All along the watchtower, Jehovah's Witnesses governing body explains why God is delaying Armageddon. That story's from GodDiscussion.com, and I think it may have something to do with, you know, would they need more time to distribute Watchtower and Awake newsletters, which you can find here on the ground of bus stops which I found a few weeks ago, and I forget if it was Watchtower or Awake. Oh, geez, what did it say? It made me do a double take, and I even picked it up the next time I saw it and brought it home and showed it to my girlfriend. I was like, this sentence doesn't make any sense, does it? Yeah, it'll come to me. It's just a grammatically incorrect, like, cover story headline. If you see something, say something. The campaign from the Department of Reichland Security is appropriately extending their campaign and expanding to the Jewish community. More on that from the Sun Sentinel. Director hopes his new film, The Ledge, will be the Brokeback Mountain for atheists. And the Belief blog from CNN gets into why we're drawn to Harry Potter's theology. It's been 13 years since the first Harry Potter book landed on the store shelves and provoked some Christian conservatives to begin voicing opposition to J.K. Rowling's world of wizardry. Had it been in the Old Testament, Harry Potter would have been put to death. You don't make heroes out of warlocks. You can get into that if you want to. It's written by, I believe, a ordained priest or minister or something. I think it's a female, which reminds me, you know, Bill Hicks talking about, you know, do you mind their women priests? I don't care. Make them purple, eight arms. Not going to make me listen to them any more or less than I already do. We close out the July 14th Pop Culture News Purge from HolyHexes.com. Abuse, atheists, and hip-hop masons. And we grab this from Examiner.com. Christian rapper Bizzle says Jay-Z has some explaining to do. Now, if you're a fan of VigilantCitizen.com and if you're a fan of looking at symbolism and hidden occult memes within pop culture, and even sometimes more specifically within hip-hop, which I think you'd agree has become pretty much the dominant music. The track is on YouTube, and we're going to listen to it. It's called Explaining to Do. There are no real swears, but there are a lot of N-words, and I left them in, so watch out. Christian rapper Bizzle says Jay-Z has some explaining to do.
Yeah. Your boss should have told you I was coming, nigga. Bizzle. L-A-V-Y-F-S. Yes. Let's go. Now tell me, am I the only nigga that's sick of Jay? Sick of this freaking lame? Ain't it a bucket you finna kick any minute a day? Nigga, just claim what you is. I'm hearing that you a mason, so explain. The pyramids that you sit on the stage, is it the same as what you lift when you bang the rock? Nigga, you rap. How is it that you can page Barack? Or is it that there's something that's way deeper than we can see? This and Jesus, seeing how naive people can be. Ain't it strange he repeatedly saying he got, then he got to calling him hoe for the name of God, Jehovah. But I studied you, nigga, cause I was a fan. But I'm a fan of the Lord first, so I will be damned if I'ma let you get over. Twist the fan souls up, have them chant hover for Satan soldier. Hover, hover is what you got them yelling. But they looking to the stage instead of looking up to heaven. I know about you and the Lord, the Lima. Know about Crowley and the cult you believe in. Homie, I'm a Christian to the core. If you listen, he dissing like every Christian put to yours. So nigga, we finna war. He on top of the column and at the bottom of the bottom. He richer than me in dollars. I'm rich in spirit, I got him. I'm David E. Goliath. The Lord is my power, so I don't need not a dollar to snipe him out of the tower. Is it just in my mind, or is it just that you're blind to the rock of weird designs, new symbolism and signs? And if you listen, you see how much he be dissing God. He ain't Satan, he just enslaving his assembly line. Conspiracy? Nah, go ahead and look it up. I ain't never been the chef for me to ever cook it up. I just hope people don't brush this off. Disregard and cut this off. Now if you with me to say,
nigga, you got some explaining to do. My nigga, you got some explaining to do. And I'm listening, cause all the evidence is saying is true. So homie, you got some explaining to do. And I'm listening, I hope you're ready. My Lord is coming for you. And when you have some explaining to do, homie, you gon' have some explaining to do. And we listening.
Aight, Jay, I saw your new video. On to the next one. Far from the best one. All black hoodie, white boy, black lipstick. Voodoo paint with skulls and blood dripping. They ain't even hip hop, nigga, that's gothic. All black everything, guess he wasn't kidding. And what's with all the black crows? Oh, your girl's a black bird. Satanic symbol slashing when you lack words. Two flashes of the Baphomet. One flash of Christ on the cross with bullets on side marking him. I'm lost again. What it gotta do with the song? And if it doesn't, which it doesn't, then tell me what all you marketing. All black album. How come 99 problems? A song number 9. So the outcome upside down is 3/6, followed by a song called Lucifer. How did we miss it? What about the missus? Used to be a Christian. Now she rocks Baphomet heads in the pictures. Nah, that's Sasha. That's someone different. But what about Rihanna? I heard she with the business. I bet y'all all do songs with Lady Gaga. But as soon as I get in the game, it's baby Papa. I never call Jay-Z Hova like he my guy. It's only one of those, the father I call Abba. So watch close if you cherish survival. Bury your rifles, carry your Bible, cause the war's on. Seek the truth, it's there in your Bible. Quit serving these American idols if you with me to say.
You got some explaining to do. My nigga, you got some explaining to do. And I'm listening, cause all the evidence is saying is true. So on me, you got some explaining to do. And I'm listening, I hope you're ready. My Lord is coming for you. And then you have some explaining to do. Homie, you gon' have some explaining to do.
Get more in depth if you boys really real enough. I'll explain later. I'll explain later. It's the return of the God Mason. It's the return of the God Mason. Bastards, hope you've been reading your psalms and chapters, paying your tithe, being good Catholics. I'm coming. Devil's pie, say some dessert for us.
That was Bizzle explaining to do, and you actually heard the man being dissected in the song there, sampled at the end, Jay-Z. And I think I dig that song the more I hear it. There's lots of great nuggets in there. He has another song called Truth Music that is linked up on his YouTube channel. But I'd never noticed or realized, and I'd heard, you know, in numerous Jay-Z nicknames, Hova. I've heard that a million times, but I'd never connected it to Jehovah. Fascinating. That transitions us somehow to all the latest from cyberspacewar.com, where we begin with one of the many posts from my man Alan in Omaha. A little too close to Fort Calhoun, but aren't we all a little too close to something? Huge thanks for him. To him for all his work on cyberspacewar.com. Gnostic texts reveal manipulation of mankind. The Gnostics provide us with a better description than any other source of so-called grays. You know, those aliens depicted in UFO sightings. Author John Lash writes in his article, The Gnostic Theory of Alien Intrusion, and that is a special report on redicecreations.com, and John Lash has been a guest on Red Ice Radio, as yours truly has as well, discussing the Manchurian Assange. But the Gnostic creation myth is unique in that it includes a full-blown explanation of how inorganic alien beings came to be present in our solar system. And I never knew growing up that there were books not in the Bible that we had. Oh, we got rid of those books of the Bible that talked about these weird giants and... That doesn't transition to the rest of the things that we have on Cyberspace War. And there is a lot. And our next one was our second story on the most recent episode of NewWorldNextWeek.com. Dear Netflix, people really hate the price hike and are threatening to cancel.
Dear Netflix is trending after the movie and TV rental service hiked its fees by 60%, igniting a social media firestorm. Customers who paid $10 a month for streaming services plus one DVD at a time can now expect to pay $16 a month for the same plan. The change prompted 28,000 comments on Netflix's Facebook page and widespread complaint from customers. Movie critic Roger Ebert tweeted, quote, "I switched to streaming only for $7.99 a month. New subscribers will pay the new rates immediately, but for Netflix's current 20 million subscribers, base, the change will go into effect in September.
September 1st, to be precise. Jacking the prices, making you choose. And we'll first note, navigating Netflix.com, on the other hand, will always be free. And the second episode is coming soon from Media Monarchy and TragedyandHope.com. Navigating Netflix.com. The site is still kind of being built and populated with content, but please go check it out and bookmark it and subscribe, and you'll get the episodes, high quality, low quality video, audio only, and all the notes and all the references and all the amazing work that Paul Verge of Divergent Films and Remedy Radio and Richard Grove and Lisa Arbacheski and Tony Myers, also of TragedyandHope.com. All the amazing work all gets put into navigating Netflix. And the other thing we'll note is, oh God, everybody's... we are all up in arms about it. Meanwhile, other people are wondering whether they're going to get their Social Security check. So this is one of those kind of perspective moments. But Anonymous left a comment, and some of the things reference the article that we have posted from Reuters that I read in its entirety on NewWorldNextWeek.com, so I won't repeat that here, but only to say from the comment, Netflix has not long enjoyed a lot of goodwill from its customers. Subscriber data is carefully controlled, but for long-term customers, it's become very obvious that Netflix is losing customers almost as fast as it gains new ones. It's also become obvious that Netflix intends eventually to be a streaming-only service for video. Thus, the price increase now, before the announcement that DVDs will no longer be offered. Naturally, the excuse will be the cost of postage or the cost of DVDs. The extent of disapproval among Netflix customers is only beginning to be impossible to disguise. Watch for a mass exodus before a takeover bid by one of the already overblown media monopolies. And I had to comment back and note that they're right about the excuse of the cost of postage and the cost of DVDs, especially with the slow and steady death of the United States Postal Service, soon to cancel Saturday mail here in America, probably in a stealthy way. They'll roll it out slowly. I believe I also saw reports that just geographically, statistically, demographically, it's going to hurt African Americans the most when post offices close and mail stops going on Saturday for first. You know, then they'll do Tuesday next. So no Saturday mail means no DVD movie for families on a Saturday night. I think it's also important to note, too, that the name of the company was never Mailflix. It was Netflix. So what will we do? We at home are probably going to cut one of the queues of physical discs. But let's move on through cyberspacewar.com. Fight the net. Pentagon unveils defensive cyber war strategy from Time Magazine and their Battleland blog. The Pentagon rolled out its new cyber defense strategy Thursday, with the PDF link for you to download that wonderful piece. And they hyped it with the news that foreign hijackers from an unidentified country invaded the computers of one of its unidentified contractors in March and pilfered 24,000 sensitive documents in one fell swoop. Cybersecurity is a Pentagon growth area, make no mistake about it, and we've reported that for you repeatedly, covering the conferences and conventions and the sales pitch. The rush is on, the cyber gold rush, but it's not about freeing humanity and giving information and teaching people how to fish. It's about telling you how to be afraid. Cybersecurity is a Pentagon growth area. Make no mistake about it. Lord knows I've contributed to the deluge, so says this writer of Time magazine. But it's one of those arcane areas where progress is hard to measure. Is the threat as dire as sometimes portrayed? It's important to realize that the Pentagon doesn't store real secrets on networks linked to the internet, just like our dams and all those other things aren't linked to the internet either, but that doesn't stop them from fear-mongering about hackers blowing up the Hoover Dam and it's Armageddon and dogs and cats living together. Deputy Defense Secretary William Lynn, who just announced he's going to retire because his job is done, cramming the cybercom down your throats, down the pipes, the tubes. Lynn unveiled the new cyber strategy, told an audience at the National Defense University in Washington that crucial files, not top secret or secret, have been stolen in recent years. Much taken was of little value, he said, but a great deal of it concerns our most sensitive systems, including aircraft avionics, surveillance technologies, satellite communication systems, and network security protocols. Over breakfast Thursday, Marine General James Cartwright, the vice chairman of the Joint Chiefs, said the Pentagon's current emphasis on cyber defense needs to change. It's currently 90% defensive and 10% offensive. He said those numbers need to be swapped. This strategy talks more about how we're going to defend the networks. The next iteration will have to start to talk about, here's a strategy that says to the attacker, if you do this, the price to you is going to go up. Safe bet the price to us is going to go up, too. Related updates from Cryptagon and OldThinkerNews.com. Former CIA head General Keith B. Alexander says we should just build a new internet to improve cybersecurity. And you know they already have. We can euphemistically refer to it as Internet 2. And much like they'll let the regular physical roads fall apart and force you onto toll roads that you already paid for once or twice in your taxes and your inflation, but that you'll pay for again to have the privilege to drive on it. I think that analogy works pretty well from the physical roadways to the information superhighways. And the one from OldThinkerNews.com, Pentagon Perception Manager knows how to manipulate search engine algorithm. Our next story on CyberspaceWar.com, U.S. suspects some foreign-made components threaten cybersecurity. From ABC News, some foreign-made components are being manufactured to make it easier to launch cyber attacks on U.S. companies and consumers, a security official at the Department of Homeland Security said. I'm aware of instances where that has happened, said Greg Schaefer, who is the acting deputy undersecretary, National Protection and Programs Director at the Department of Homeland Security. Schaefer didn't say where specifically these components are coming from or elaborate on how they could be manufactured in such a way as to facilitate a cyber attack. But Schaefer's comments confirmed that the U.S. government believes some electronics manufacturers have included parts in products that could make U.S. consumers and corporations more vulnerable to targeted cyber attacks. A device tampered with prior to distribution or sale could act as a Trojan horse in the opening wave of an international cyber war. Contaminated products could be used to jeopardize the entire network. The administration by Schaefer, or rather the admission by Schaefer, came out Thursday after repeated questioning from Representative Jason Chaffetz, Repug of Utah, at a House Oversight and Government Reform Committee hearing on cyber threats. ABC News previously reported that the FBI was investigating a case in which counterfeit Cisco routers were being sold to various government agencies, but this is the first time that a government official has confirmed that the threat is real. More on this story from the Epoch Times and ABC News and links to YouTube and FastCompany.com, who I believe originally broke the story, Gather.com and MSNBC and more. The threat is real. As we've documented for you, I think, quite well in the past, when you have companies like P-TECH having software on everything from the FAA to the CIA to the DOD, being run by Hassan al-Qaeda, a supposed designated international terrorist. So an international terrorist software was running on our computers during the events of 9/11. Google Plus leading to creepy omnipresence online with a very weak question mark. From PC World, Google Plus's creepy integration everywhere may extend your online identity when you surf, and its social circles can be very useful and flexible. But it remains to be seen how Google's foray into social networking, Google Plus, will lead to a stable version of identity online, like what Executive Chairman Eric Schmidt talked up at a recent event. After all, the identity you can build on Google Plus right now is almost identical to the one you can build on Facebook. The same profile, pictures, status updates. The main difference right now is the friends you can add to your circles. Due to the problems Google's been having with letting people into the system, which Schmidt cites as Google Plus's biggest hiccup, given all the hatred for Facebook over privacy and security snafus, it seems to me the issue on the internet is not just lack of identity, but lack of control over your personal persona online. At a recent event, Schmidt shared some of his thoughts on the newly launched Google Plus. He implied that the Google Plus system is designed for building identity, the real issue of the internet. As TechCrunch reports, Schmidt said Google tried to build a system that you could use for relationships over time. Circles is a particularly well-suited to the contact list that you have on your phone, he was quoted as saying. Schmidt is right about one thing. We don't need another Facebook, and online social interaction could definitely use more authenticity. Schmidt said more products are planned for Google+. Let's hope they include strong privacy controls and actually useful applications, lest Google Plus turn into just another social obligation. I've been sent the invitation. I've even clicked someone else's profile, but we haven't dived into that yet. Not like it matters, because we're already on Google. That's where all my websites are hosted. And that's how you can get in touch with me at MediaMonarchy@gmail.com. There is no anonymity on the online anyway. John Young of Cryptome, I think, correctly called it the worldwide wiretap. We now get to the July 14th DEF CON news purge on CyberspaceWar.com. With Murdoch's Watergate, military meltdown, and more. The first story links to allgov.com. Hacking scandal could be Murdoch's Watergate, but one of the sources for that article goes to a guy named Carl Bernstein, who you may know from Woodward and Bernstein, who were fed information probably by some CIA cutout to destroy a president who needed to be destroyed and taken out. But it was another level of inside job that we don't have time to get into right now, but I think it's interesting to see Carl Bernstein throwing the word Watergate around as the phone hacking story gets bigger and bigger and bigger. You may have heard it first on episode 79 of NewWorldNextWeek.com, and we covered it for you pretty well last week, and it's only gotten bigger and worse, and perhaps in a way a lot more positive for us, for the average people. Maybe. Hacking scandal could be Rupert Murdoch's Watergate, his son could be prosecuted by the U.S., and the newspapers could have even hacked into U.S. phones as well.
Good evening from New York. This is Wednesday, July 13th, 482 days until the 2012 presidential election, and the day Rupert Murdoch's spying scandal washed up on our shores like so much flotsam, with the line of politicians suddenly wanting an investigation into an allegation that one of Murdoch's papers tried to hack into the phones of 9/11 victims, forming on the right. My bet is, says Senate Commerce Committee Chair Jay Rockefeller in proposing his investigation, we'll find some criminal stuff. as I see it, says Republican Congressman Peter King, as he writes demanding an investigation by FBI Director Robert Mueller, I would expect more things to be coming out over the next several weeks. Senator Robert Menendez wants the Justice Department to do the inquiry. Senator Frank Lautenberg is suggesting that what Murdoch's men did just in England alone merits investigation by our Securities and Exchange Commission. The blood is in the water, and the sharks are bipartisan. Congressman King, regular on Murdoch's Fox News, indicating just how much blood there is in that water, also hinting at the Corrupt Practices Act, which prohibits American companies like Murdoch's from trying to bribe foreign officials, and hitting the 9/11 victims front. He told the website Politico, quote, as I see it, I would expect more things to be coming out over the next several weeks, and as we approach 9/11, the 10th anniversary, it's even going to get worse. Then there is Mr. Rockefeller of West Virginia. The reported allegations against News Corporation are very serious, indicate a pattern of illegal activity, and involve thousands of potential victims. It is important to ensure that no United States laws were broken and no United States citizens were victimized. Senator Lautenberg, the limited information already reported in this case raises serious questions about the legality of the conduct of News Corporation and its subsidiaries. Further investigation may reveal the current reports only scratch the surface of the problem at News Corporation. Needless to say, 9/11 families are also outraged at even a hint that their lost loved ones' phones might have been hacked, and the only evidence thus far is a hint, an unnamed source telling a rival London tabloid that News of the World reporters have tried to buy phone numbers of 9/11 victims in hopes of hacking into their voicemails. Sally Regenhardt, who lost her 28-year-old firefighter son on September 11th, told Politico today, it's hard enough for people to deal with the 10th anniversary, and now this, it just adds more salt to the wounds. If it's true, then it is an egregious violation of decency and respect. Joining me now is John Dean, Countdown contributor, author of Conservatives Without Conscience, and, of course, White House counsel to President Richard Nixon. John, good evening.
Good evening, Keith.
They certainly have volume, but do these calls for investigations have any breadth or width to them? Is there anything going on here?
Well, given the people who are calling for them, they certainly have some strength to them because these are people who have the ability to actually initiate investigations or put pressure on investigative bodies to look into these things. So I say yes, they do.
Where is the most likely success to be found, even if it's just in terms of success being defined by whether or not there's actually an investigation? Is it criminal or financial or what, or some combination thereof?
Well, I suspect that the most likely place will be the SEC, and the staff is probably already making some preliminary looks at the accounting practices to see how they accounted for what were in effect bribes. That'll be one place. The Department of Justice may well be looking. They have been very strict in recent years on the Foreign Corrupt Practices Act, where you cannot bribe in foreign country if you're an American corporation and take advantage of the business you get from that bribe. And they've cracked down on that, and that's a very substantial and troublesome statute for these people, I would think. Those are, to me, the most prominent. The civil suits right now they're facing don't look very serious. They're nothing unusual. But the regulatory and potential criminal investigations are very serious.
So the way that this could be prosecuted here, even if there's nothing to the allegation of attempted hacking of 9/11 victims' phones, would be via this process you just described, the idea that an American company was trying to bribe foreign officials. Is that correct?
Right. It's actually a post-Watergate law called the Foreign Corrupt Practices Act, which is addressed at this very issue, that American corporations cannot pay bribes in foreign countries as a way of doing business. It's a statute that can only be brought against the people here in the United States. They don't have a jurisdiction over the people in Great Britain. But if there's a conspiracy to do that and the people in the United States were involved and aware of it, they're in a heap of trouble.
The ritual of politicians in Washington calling for investigations, it's one you know quite well. What does it mean when it suddenly goes bipartisan? The day started with three Democrats talking about this, and now Peter King is a very conservative Republican, and as I pointed out, a frequent guest on Fox News, basically in Murdoch's collection of politicians calling for this. What does that mean just in a symbolic sense?
Well, it's kind of a crack in the wall symbolically when somebody like Peter King, who is clearly, his credentials are very pro-Fox in their positions, and he's a frequent guest there, that he's taken the independent position to say, hey, this is something we need to look into. So he sort of signals to his peers, if you will, on the right, that maybe they should be taking that position.
Do you find it unusual that these politicians would be trying to read the tea leaves? I mean, again, Rockefeller said he guessed they'd find criminal stuff, which is, I guess, a legal term, criminal stuff. And King said that he expected more things to come out as we approached 9/11. It seems awfully unusual for them to be saying, to not being extremely small-c conservative in terms of an investigation or a series of investigations that haven't even been authorized yet.
Well, Keith, these are all seasoned people who are talking about that. They've been around Washington a while. They've seen this pattern before. And given what they've seen so far, they have good reason to suspect there may be something more. We have seen not only smoke, but some flames. And they have good reason to have a hunch that there may be more here. And I think they're being proactive in addressing it.
Yes, and the politicians are rushing towards the flames with their weenies on their sticks, in the old camping terminology. Downtown contributor, author, columnist John Dean, as always, great thanks, John.
So many things connected. Even the pseudo-sexual references of weenies on sticks reminds us of Bohemian Grove that's kicking off today. And there again we have the ghosts of Nixon and Watergate, and there's John Dean and secret cabals. The one update we have from earlier this morning, News Corp UK newspaper CEO Rebecca Brooks has resigned. And for more on all of that, Bloomberg, Raw Story, allgov.com, and the rest of the DEF CON news purge on cyberspacewar.com, Washington Post website, jobs section hacked. Anonymous hacks Monsanto computers, posts employee info, hackers expose Booz Allen Hamilton data, and threat level just called it military meltdown Monday as 90,000 military usernames and hashes released. Again from threat level, how digital detectives deciphered Stuxnet, the most menacing malware in history that has been proven quite well was created by the U.S. and Israelis. Stuxnet timeline shows correlation among events, again, from threat level. Wi-Fi hacking neighbor from hell, sentenced to 18 years. Smart meters deconstructed. And another note on Google Plus, Mark Zuckerberg of Facebook and the higher-ups of Google all turned their privacy on Google Plus. So that should tell you something. And the Register wondering if Google is turning us into forgetful morons. And the last note comes from the Washington Post. CBS faked their 4th of July fireworks display. TV fakery indeed. Let's blast through all the remaining stories on cyberspacewar.com. Secret World War between hostile Greys, Dracos, and humanity. That story blew up on beforeitsnews.com, getting thousands of hits. Inuits attest Earth may have tilted on its axis. Gilgamesh and the Search for Life, Part 2. The Part 2 to the Part 1 that was posted back in May on cyberspacewar.com. Nazi UFO movies. You can make it a Nazi UFO movie weekend with Nazi UFO conspiracy on YouTube and the Aldebaran mystery. All of these things, Kexberg, Hans Kammler, Die Glock, or The Bell, Maury Island, and Kenneth Arnold, which was discussed, I believe, last night on groundzeromedia.org. We also have the rundown on the ISS, International Space Station, 1998 to present. And the final launch, which happened last Friday, and we covered it for you here, but one other post about the final launch of the shuttle Atlantis STS-135. More from the NASA website. We also have Rocks on the Brain. Dawn mission to enter Vesta orbit very soon. It's an asteroid belt. But what might be discovered in the next year that Dawn orbits the asteroid? You can get more on this from, again, the NASA website on the Dawn spacecraft mission. And finally, on cyberspacewar.com, the James Fox video, I Know What I Saw. Government and military officials reveal the truth about UFOs. That is from the History Channel. And you can get more from IKnowWhatISawTheMovie.com. And we also have a couple related updates and flashbacks posted below this from Blacklisted News. 165 years after its discovery, the planet Neptune has completed its first orbit. And from Gizmodo, a scientist punch a hole in the fabric of time with a time cloak. And the last one from the IntelHub.com, digging into the rabbit hole, going back to 1983, an article from the Washington Post with the discovery of Planet X? Question mark. That is everything from cyberspacewar.com, my friends, and we now need to pick up the pace if we're going to get through all the remaining news and move to foodworldorder.com. Major grocer Albertsons getting rid of self-checkout lanes, chained to replace computers. Once more, human contact, and those humans would also like some more hours. That story was the third story on the most recent NewWorldNextWeek.com between myself and James Corbett. So again, I won't read it all back into the record for you. Genetically modified food labels don't sit well in U.S. Agreement on labeling probably won't have much effect in the U.S. From the Los Angeles Times, activists rejoiced last week when a hard-fought battle over international standards for labeling genetically modified food came to an end. More on that from CTV. And it came to an end, finally, after decades of debate. But the agreement, which many say opens the door for labels to be placed on such foods, will probably have little effect on food labels in the U.S. for the foreseeable future. Delegates to the so-called Codex Alimentarius Commission, a body created in 1963 by the United Nations to set voluntary standards for food safety and handling, have been arguing over labels for genetically engineered food for the better part of 20 years. Concerned that the biotech food is not adequately tested and could be unsafe for people or the environment, some countries, particularly ones in Europe, have pushed for mandatory labeling. Others, including the U.S., have argued that such labels are misleading because the genetically modified products that are on the market have been thoroughly tested and deemed safe. Just like all those great pharmaceuticals, thoroughly tested and safe. You can get more on this from consumerreports.org. and the aforementioned CTV.ca, but when we reference the so-called Codex Alimentarius Commission, we give you the flashback link to farmwars.info, and you may recall we interviewed Barbara Peterson of Farm Wars, and that's on the archives on archive.org. The Codex Fluoride Auschwitz Monsanto Connection, and it's all there. IG Farben, Auschwitz, the Wolheim Memorial, Fritz Dermeer. It's all connected. Nazis and the United Nations and the control of food. Our third and final post from foodworldorder.com is the July 14th binge and purge news. Purge gardens, floodgates, and playgrounds. Naturalnews.com reporting that a record 1 in 6 now on food stamps as the Depression escalates. 12 signs that the world is running out of food from BusinessInsider.com and police state in action. We have stories from the Intel Hub, Cryptagon, Natural News. Woman faces 93 days in jail for planting vegetables in her front yard. Bureaucrats in Michigan threaten a woman with jail time for a vegetable garden.
An Oak Park woman goes before a judge. Her crime? Growing vegetables in her yard.
Turns out that a veggie garden in front of the house is against the city code. Fox News' Alexis Wiley reports.
The price of organic food is kind of through the roof.
So why not grow your own?
These are pepper plants. This one is a jalapeno. You can see there's a little baby jalapeno right here, which is super cute and one of our favorites.
But Julie Bass's garden is a little unique because it's in her front yard.
We thought it'd be really cool to do it so the neighbors could see. The kids love it. The kids from the neighborhood all come and help.
But Julie's cool garden has landed her in hot water with the city of Oak Park. Code enforcement gave her a warning, then a ticket, and now she's been charged with a misdemeanor.
I think it's sad that the city of Oak Park, that's already strapped for cash, is paying a lot of money to have a prosecutor bothering us.
That's not what we want to see in our front yard.
Why? Well, the city is pointing to a code that says a front yard has to have suitable live plant material. But here's the big question. What's suitable?
Do you think that this is suitable live plant material?
It's definitely live. It's definitely plant. It's definitely material. We think it's suitable.
Why is this not suitable?
Well, if you look at the definition of what suitable is in Webster's Dictionary, it'll say common. So if you look around and you look in any other community, what's common to a front yard is a nice grass yard with beautiful trees and bushes and flowers.
But when you look at front yards like this and this, is Julie's vegetable garden really worth the city's time and money? What do you say to those who say, this is ridiculous?
Why, I would argue that you won't find that opinion from most people in Oak Park.
That's ridiculous.
I have a bunch of little children. I want to take walks to come by and see everything growing. I think it's a very wonderful thing for our neighborhood.
They don't have nothing else to do. They're going to take it to court for a garden.
Well, we did find one neighbor who wasn't a fan. So you think it needs to go?
I do. I know there's a backyard. Do it in the backyard.
They say, you know, why should you grow things in the front? Well, why shouldn't I? They're fine. They're pretty. They're well-maintained.
It looks like this critical debate is headed for a jury trial, and neither side is backing down.
I could sell out and save my own self and just not have them bother me anymore, but then there's no telling what they're going to harass the next person about.
Now, there's another pretrial scheduled for July 26th. The next step could be a jury trial. In Oak Park, I'm Alexis Wiley, Fox 2 News.
But thank God. Update. Charges dropped against Oak Park woman over veggie garden. However, as Cryptogon.com reports, city may now prosecute her for an absurd pet issue. Now the punishments come. Down the binge and purge list, Nestle to buy control of top Chinese confectioner, Starbucks reorganizes for international growth, i.e. China, and the food fight in Washington.
And now some fresh pickings from the political grapevine. Former White House Communications Director Anita Dunn strongly advocated for the health care overhaul that included, of course, scores of new regulations. However, now she is at odds with First Lady Michelle Obama's childhood obesity initiative. The Washington Post reports Dunn now works on behalf of the food and advertising industry, managing a campaign against the administration's efforts to create voluntary nutritional guidelines for foods marketed to children. Mrs. Obama has urged food manufacturers and retailers to curb marketing unhealthy food to kids. Peas are a very healthy food, though not always a favorite, of course. President Obama today urged budget negotiators to make the difficult choices necessary in the midst of the debt ceiling debate and, quote, eat our peas. So naturally, pea growers are reacting. The USA Dry Pea and Lentil Council wasn't interpreting the remarks negatively, but said if peas were served more in the White House and in Congress, quote, it will contribute to a balanced diet, if not a balanced budget. And finally, House Budget Committee Chairman Paul Ryan was berated by a college professor last week for the purchase of two $350 apiece bottles of wine. It happened during dinner with two companions at an upscale D.C. restaurant. Ryan says the professor was possibly drunk, that his companions ordered the wine, and that he only had one glass and paid for his meal and one bottle of wine. Mediaite pointed out, quote, I think we all have the right to eat dinner without being annoyed by some other patron of the same upscale restaurant who thinks we're spending too much on dinner. Ryan's office pointed us to a conservative blog that noted President Obama served an even pricier bottle of wine during a past state dinner that taxpayers presumably paid for, but that Ryan paid the bill for his expensive wine.
That's some pretty low-hanging fruit from Fox, but what do you expect? And it's still nice to have the food theme and the vegetable theme also touch upon our massive drowning debt. Grist.org reporting USDA may have just opened the GMO floodgates. Here come the super weeds. USDA approves invasive GMO grass. More on that from redgreenandblue.org. Meanwhile, Monsanto and the Gates Foundation push GM crops on Africa. And my man, BobTuscan.com, reports that the EPA admits that fluoride must be phased out. An interesting one from AllGov.com. It may be time for invasive species to step up to the plate. Basically, another way of telling you we are going to eat insects. You've probably seen that meme rise more and more over the last couple of years. But if it's an invasive species, maybe it's time for the king of the food chain, where all arrows point to humans, to step up and eat the insects. interesting video, but it's all in Japanese. But you can watch the automatic butcher bot debone 1,500 whole chickens per hour. The Washington Post reporting on their checkup blog, another way coffee and tea may keep you healthy by fighting the MRSA superbug. Meanwhile, access to grocery stores doesn't improve diets, study finds, and a Philly soul food truck takes top honors at the Vendy's. That would be Food Cart Awards. Appalled mom documents filthy conditions at fast food playlands, again from the Los Angeles Times, and from KPRC, the weird news feed from clicktohouston.com, man crashes into drive-in, orders food. Early this morning from the New York Times, food makers push back on ads for children, and we close out Food World Order as Jarvis Cocker sang on his self-titled debut album, Fat Children. ABC News asks the question, but Raw Story puts it more in the demand-command form. Should parents lose custody of obese children? Doctors say parents should lose custody of super obese kids.
An obesity specialist has riled some in the medical profession with his provocative recommendations on how to cope with some severely overweight children. Roughly 2 million U.S. children are extremely obese.
In extreme cases, placement into foster care can be a life-saving option.
Dr. David Ludwig of Children's Hospital Boston co-authored an article in the prominent Journal of the American Medical Association making just that case.
Today we're seeing obese adolescents who weigh 350, 450 pounds or more, suffering from type 2 diabetes, sleep apnea, and other immediately life-threatening complications.
Ludwig argues that placing these children in foster care can help them learn to eat and exercise better.
Placement into a foster environment with just 3 square meals a day, a snack or two, and access to regular, gentle physical activity can sometimes lead to dramatic weight loss.
But an expert on medical ethics says foster care isn't the right solution.
It has a certain surface attraction, and in one or two cases it's actually been tried. You basically say, look, it's child neglect. But in reality, we don't have any magic bullet for obesity.
Art Kaplan of the University of Pennsylvania suggests the government tackle unhealthy food and therefore obesity the same way it took on smoking.
The government can certainly do a better job, if you will, going after food manufacturers to say, make healthier food, make better food. That's what worked with cigarettes, and I think that's the lesson for what we need to do with the challenge of obesity.
A British medical journal reported last year that obesity played a role in several custody cases in that country. Matt Friedman, The Associated Press.
That's everything from foodworldorder.com. And again, I'll put out the call if you'd like to help post on foodworldorder.com. Send me an email, mediamonarchy@gmail.com. So, after Fatty gets a fix in Fast Food Nation, they head on over to the dollar store, and we'll head on over to MediaMonarchy.com to discover that even dollar stores are struggling in the Obama depression. From CBS out of Los Angeles, more stores across the U.S. that offer deeply discounted products are seeing their sales decline after years of growth amid America's Great Recession. And one analyst said on Monday it's another sign of an even deeper downturn.
Well, there's word this morning that some of those dollar stores, discount stores, are struggling right now after having boomed during tough economic times. Joining us live now, top retail analyst Howard Davidowitz. Howard, I got to tell you, and Vicky and I were talking about this moments ago, that may be the case across the rest of the country, but she and I both go to what we have known as the 99-cent stores here in Los Angeles. And every time that we are in one of those stores, they are packed. So it seems like people are certainly using that opportunity for bargains here on the West Coast.
But yeah, that's true across the country. In other words, when they say that those businesses are off from their absolute peak, they're not off. In other words, they're still the fastest growing segment in the retail business. Between Family Dollar and Dollar General, they're building 1,000 new stores. Aldi Food exploding, 99-cent stores doing well, Dollar Tree doing well. However, they have had a slight turndown in missing Wall Street's huge expectation. And I think what's going on in those stores is that we are in a depression for 80% of Americans. It's that In those stores, somebody comes in with $12 to do all their shopping. The person who used to come in with $12 now comes in with $8. In other words, the economy is continuing to be worse. The Obama depression continues to explode. There are no answers. We're completely dysfunctional and lost. And 80% of America is in a depression.
All right, Howard. Well, let me ask you this, Howard, and we'll just expand this off to the next issue. If they can't get this debt ceiling thing resolved in Washington over the next couple of weeks, people talk about just a chaos on basically on August the 3rd. Is there chaos on August the 3rd, or is it just simply kind of a blip in the radar?
I think there'll be chaos in capital markets. In other words, what I think will happen is you have the potential for the market over a couple of weeks to drop a couple of thousand points. That will be tremendously disruptive to the American people in the sense that one of the things we got going for us is the top 10% who spends 40% of the money has been booming. It's been booming as a function of strong capital markets. If that also goes in a tank, that will again explode further the Obama depression.
All right.
So it's not good.
All right, Howard, on that, we've got to go. The president, by the way, has a press conference coming up at 8 o'clock our time, and of course you'll hear it live as he continues to try to pressure the Republicans to come over to his way of thinking on this debt ceiling.
I love that the second time the guy says the Obama depression, the guy's like, okay. You said it once. I'm not going to have you say it twice because he's our dear leader. He's the new smiling face of international fascism, which, like Mussolini said, is really corporatism. And we see, again, the themes and the memes. The debt ceiling debate winds its way through all of these discussions, whether it's the dollar store or the news of the world. But let's get our other EconoCrash posting. Speaking of the Obama depression, Obamasiah can't guarantee social security checks will go out on August 3rd. Meanwhile, military funding will continue on schedule. Again, from the Skull and Bones CIA-connected Columbia Broadcasting System, President Obama on Tuesday said he cannot guarantee that retirees will receive their Social Security checks August 3rd if Democrats and Republicans in D.C. don't reach an agreement on reducing the deficit in the coming weeks. Well, I could read the quote, but let's just hear it from Barry himself.
No matter what happens, the Social Security checks are going to go out on August the 3rd. There are about $20 billion worth of Social Security checks that have to go out the day after the government is supposedly going to go into default.
Well, this is not just a matter of Social Security checks. These are veterans checks. These are folks on disability and their checks. There are about 70 million checks that go out.
Can you guarantee, as president, those checks will go out on August the 3rd?
I cannot guarantee that those checks go out on August 3rd if we haven't resolved this issue, because there may simply not be the money in the coffers to do it.
Mr. Obama said in an interview with CBS Evening News anchor Scott Pelley, according to excerpts that had been released by CBS News, the Obama administration and many economists have warned of an economic catastrophe if the United States does not raise the amount it is legally allowed to borrow by August 2nd. Lawmakers from both parties want to use the threat of that deadline to work out a broader package on long-term deficit reduction, with Republicans looking to cut trillions of dollars in federal spending, while Democrats are pushing for a more balanced approach, which would include both spending cuts and increased revenue through taxes. More on this charade from the Los Angeles Times and CBS and YouTube and CBS and PennLive.com. And hell, let's click back to Google and see what's going on right now. 1 hour ago from the Wall Street Journal, Obama ready to move on debt as House sets vote. None of this will change as long as our economy is based on debt. Fractional reserve banking and fiat currency run by, at least in this hemisphere, the Federal Reserve. Not federal, no reserves. They print money and loan it to us at interest. Now would basically be the time for Jesus to come in and throw the money changers out, if you're down with that analogy. posted below this Obamasaya check bounce story are our other econocrash updates. As the U.S. regime may cite the 14th Amendment as a way to raise the debt ceiling. Cryptogon.com has this story that comes from the AFP. The White House could resort to a little-known line in the U.S. Constitution to prevent a ruinous default if Democrats and Republicans do not agree to raise the debt ceiling by August 2nd. The 143-year-old clause, written to address still potent divisions after the bloody Civil War, has been dredged up by legal scholars as well as the U.S. Treasury Secretary to suggest how a debt debacle might be avoided. But resorting to it could spark a constitutional crisis over just who, the Congress or the White House, controls the power of the federal purse. Meanwhile, from BusinessInsider.com, details from the awful June jobs report. Econ makes a $12.6 billion bid for Clorox. You know that company that owns Burt's Bees. Wisconsin prisoners to replace union workers. Meanwhile, Minnesota running out of booze and cigarettes due to their government shutdown. So many of these stories are things just out of comedy. It's reached tragicomedy, comedy of errors points. You know, now's when we need Fat Tony to get cigarettes and Duff beer back in the town in 2 minutes. Nearly one in five recent grads is out of work. Foreclosures by Bank of America expected to rise thanks to new deals. Societal chaos and how the elites will try to maintain control. That's from LouRockwell.com. Meanwhile, Moody's puts U.S. bond rating on review for possible downgrade. And, of course, the dollar drops on Moody's warning. And, of course, Ben Bernanke of the Federal Reserve and his remarks knows how to make the economy tank. Meanwhile, U.S. credit rating not worth saving, Ron Paul says, according to Politico, and the Economic Collapse blog gets into the loss of the AAA rating and how it could unleash financial hell. European markets plunge as debt crisis worsens. Gold jumps, I believe, to another record high. So, speaking of gold, the aforementioned Ron Paul asked the aforementioned Ben Bernanke, why do central banks hold gold?
At this time, recognize Mr. Paul, the subcommittee chair, for 5 minutes.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. You know, we hear that in the future we're going to have a better economy, and everybody hopes so, but it's hard to believe. It's hard for me to believe anyway, because I look at back on our past 3 years, and what Congress has done and what the Fed has done, we've literally injected about $5.3 trillion. And I don't think we got very much for it. The national debt went up $5.1 trillion. Real GDP grew less than 1%. So I don't think we've gotten a whole lot. Unemployment really hasn't recovered. We still have 7 million people that have become unemployed. And one statistic that is very glaring, if you look at the chart, is how long people are unemployed. The average time used to be 17 weeks. Now it's nearly 40 weeks they stay unemployed. So nothing there reassures me. And also, when we talk about prices, we're always reassured there's not all that much inflation. And we're told that they might start calculating inflation differently with a new CPI. Of course, we changed our CPI a few years back. There's still a free market group that calculates the CPI the old-fashioned way, and they come up with a figure. In spite of all this weak economy, the prices have gone up 35%, 9.4% every year. And I think if you just went out and talked to the average housewife, she'd probably believe the 9% rather than saying it's only 2%. So I would say what we've been doing isn't very reassuring with all this money expenditure. But my question is related to the overall policy. Spending all this money hasn't helped, And yet many allies that would endorse so much of what's been going on, whether it's the Fed or the Congress, they recognize that consumer spending is very, very important. And they concentrate on that. But the $5.1 trillion didn't go to the consumers. It went to buying bad assets. It went to bailing out banks. It went to bailing out big companies. And lo and behold, the consumer didn't end up getting this. They lost their job, and they lost their houses and mortgages, and they're still in trouble. But my question is, if you took that $5.1 trillion and said that consumer spending is good, you could have given every single person in this country $17,000. Why is it the program of both the Congress and the Fed to direct the money to the people who had been making a lot of money instead to the people who, if you argue that the consumer needs to spend the money, I obviously don't advocate this, but I would suggest, you know, maybe it could have worked better. It couldn't have worked any worse. But what is the reason we directed toward the banks and the big corporations, too big to fail, and we don't pay that much attention to the consumer if it's true, and I don't know if you agree with that or not, that consumer spending is an important issue?
Well, it is an important issue, Congressman. But you're mistaken in saying that the Federal Reserve has spent any money. You say $5 trillion. We have lent money. We have purchased securities. That's not buying. That's not dissipating, you know, the money. We've gotten all the money back. As an article over the weekend by Alan Sloan showed, in fact, the Fed has been a major profit center for the U.S. government. We've turned over profits in the last 2 years of $125 billion. So we are not costing any money in terms of budget deficits or anything like that. In terms of what we were trying to do, of course, the reason the Federal Reserve was founded a century ago was to try to address the problems arising from financial panics, which did, by the way, occur in an unregulated environment in the 19th century. We provided liquidity and short-term loans to help financial system stabilize. We did that not because we particularly care about the managers or the shareholders of financial firms.
I hate to interrupt, but my time is about up. But I would like to suggest that you say it's not spending money. Well, it's money out of thin air. You put it into the market and you hold assets, and the assets aren't, you know, they are diminishing in value when you buy up bad assets. But very quickly, if you could answer another question, because I'm curious about this. You know, the price of gold today is $1,580. The dollar during these last 3 years was devalued almost 50%. When you wake up in the morning, do you care about the price of gold?
Well, I pay attention to the price of gold, but I think it reflects a lot of things. It reflects global uncertainties. I think the reason people hold gold is as a protection against what we call tail risk, really, really bad outcomes. And to the extent that the last few years have made people more worried about the potential of a major crisis, then they have gold as a protection.
Do you think gold is money?
No.
It's not money. Even if it had been money for 6,000 years, somebody reversed that and eliminated that economic law.
Well, it's you know, it's an asset. I mean, it's the same. Would you say treasury bills are money? I don't think they're money either, but they're financial assets.
Why do central banks hold it?
Well, it's a form of reserves.
Why don't they hold diamonds?
Well, it's tradition, long-term tradition.
You know, some people still think it's money. I yield back. My time is up.
Thank you.
Tradition. Our last couple of Connor Crash notes from the market. Oracle, Iran, and the first U.S. dollar war defeat. Mounting evidence that Dominique Strauss-Kahn of the IMF was framed. That's from globalresearch.ca. Reuters reporting the European Union calling emergency meetings as crisis stalks Italy. And Blacklisted News asking the question, is Italy's 2,400 tons of gold perhaps the real target of the IMF terrorists? That sets the stage for the final post on MediaMonarchy.com. We have to kick into the lightning round for the July 14th news purge. Rearrange your synapses, beginning with 9/11 updates and the amateur aviators who became super pilots on 9/11. Fantastic article from Shoestring on 911blogger.com. It's story number one on the most recent episode of New World Next Week. 9/11 families demand to reopen case. Victims' families want 2007 Deutsche Bank fire case reopened. And Carol Brulé has the 11th version of the deception dollar and the new perception dollar. New York Daily News reporting that the new 9/11 memorial reservations swamping the online ticket system. Leon Panetta ties the war in Iraq to 9/11. CIA organized fake vaccination drive to get Osama bin Laden's family DNA. That story blows me away from The Guardian. Bush should face criminal probe over post-9/11 torture, report urges from the Christian Science Monitor. Meanwhile, U.S. senators call for a phone hacking investigation into 9/11 claims. And the update from this morning, FBI opens inquiry into hacking of 9/11 victims by Rupert Murdoch and his ilk. Former UK police intelligence analyst sacked for calling 7/7 a monstrous lie. And the last note of 9/11 updates is our second of three appearances from the Honorable Dr. Ron Paul.
Responsibility should be on the airlines, just as it's on the responsibility of the owners of chemical plants and the owners of armored cars. They take charge of that, and they do a very, very good job. And the government was in charge of security before 9/11. They did a lousy job. They prohibited guns from being on the airplane, and they said nobody should resist. And so we set the stage for 9/11. Uh-huh. So I want the owners to assume responsibility, and the burden would be on the airlines, and it would save the taxpayer an awful lot of money.
If you privatize airport screening and security, how does profiling fit into that?
Well, they're allowed to, because a private company has an obligation. If you don't like the airline and they do too much profiling, then you don't fly on that airline. But today, they're not allowed to profile. So a 95-year-old woman gets treated like a terrorist, and somebody else who really looks like that guy, I might want to ask him an extra question. Oh, well, we can't ask him as many questions. In fact, they even back off because he looks sort of suspicious. No, an airline, a private airline, has the right to be suspicious. And they can, you know, in a way. But if they overdo that, they're going to have a bad reputation, and the customers are going to, make sure that they hear about it.
And now to our extremely important BioWars EnviroHealth updates. The Intel Hub asking, is the threat of nuclear meltdown in America just over the horizon? Well, another blaze starts at nuclear test site near Las Vegas. Fires located at Area 19. Los Alamos Lab preps for flooding after fire. Radioactive leak at South Carolina nuke plant found on July 7th. Repairs still underway. Monsoon rains threatening, again, Los Alamos area with plutonium and uranium. Frantic sandbagging effort underway in some communities. And on counterpunch.org, an article that I tweeted out earlier this week, radiated rain. Radiation levels in Northwest rain were up to 130 times safe drinking water standards following 3/11. And on to Tennessee and their nuke plant woes. After tornadoes, water in reactor boiled low enough to trigger shutdown alarm. Public not told of problems. Radiation data from Seattle area survey may be withheld by the feds for national security purposes. Peaches in L.A. found with radiation at more than double background levels. Man freed after arrest for collecting radiation-contaminated rubble in Fukushima. 7.0 aftershock hits Japan coast. And scientists get ready for final phase of cloud seeding project. Believe that is in India. Belief in global warming at a new low, so Al Gore launches a re-education project. The Human Genome Project contains a million years' worth of population data. That's from io9.com. 131 kids vaccinated at gunpoint in Malawi. Drug-resistant strain of gonorrhea baffles doctors. That's from the New York Daily News. And from Natural News, Group sues cosmetic companies for falsely labeling products organic. And the last BioWars EnviroHealth note from the Epoch Times on an amazing heart attack prevention that works. It's something called vitamin C. On to the drug war, Operation Fast and Furious. Captured Los Zetas leader says they purchased weapons from the U.S. government itself. Fast and Furious, the ATF, running guns, two Mexican cartels. We fund our enemies. Setting the stage for some type of new North American civil war to create a North American union. But then there's also Operation Castaway, where the ATF trafficked guns to Honduran criminal gangs. Because, you know, the war on drugs is a $2.5 trillion racket. how big banks, private military companies, and the prison industrial complex cashes in. That's from ampedstatus.org. And it only took 9 years for the District of Criminals to finally say no to a petition for new marijuana classification. Outright lies, as the Obama DOJ says marijuana has no medical purpose. Feds reaffirm their flat earth position regarding medical cannabis. More on those stories from Normal and the Intel Hub and AllGov. Our last drug war note, the U.S. government builds first law enforcement base in Puebla, Mexico. And on to the geopolitics and the grand chessboard, where Webster Tarpley, who had been in Libya reporting on the scene of the latest war of aggression, NATO policy in Libya based on political assassination as the civilian death toll mounts.
Dr. Webster Griffin Tarpley, author and historian, joins us now on via Skype, rather, from Washington to discuss the situation in Libya with us. Dr. Tarpley, first of all, I'd like to know if you would agree with that stance that was put forward there by the Russian foreign minister, that there's no end in sight to this war and that the NATO bombings have to stop because they're causing a lot of civilian casualties.
Well, I would certainly agree that the NATO bombings have caused a tremendous humanitarian emergency, and they have caused the deaths of many civilians. I've just gotten back myself from about 2 weeks in Tripoli, and I've personally visited a number of sites that were bombed out, including the Gaddafi compound where three of his grandchildren and one of his sons was killed, and also the home of General Al-Khweldi, about 70 kilometers west of Tripoli in a locality called Sorman, where four very young children, a young mother, an aunt, a Sudanese cook, and his wife, a total of 10 civilian victims just in that site. So if you multiply that by the large number of sites, you get a large number of civilian victims.
I'm going to cut that short. That goes on. That's Webster Tarpley on Press TV on the Libyan NATO assassination campaign. But the update from Paul Joseph Watson, endgame approaches in Libya with Gaddafi set to step down. Liberation from the Taliban. U.S. builds new jails all across Afghanistan. Over 1,400 arrested and tear gassed in Malaysia protest. 13 reported dead in Mumbai blasts. And a new nation is born. Who and what is South Sudan? A massive report on the newest nation in the New World Order, allgov.com. Pakistan holds doctor who tried to collect bin Laden DNA. And the Obama Saya freezes $800 million in PAC aid.
The strained relationship between Pakistan and the United States, even more strained now. The U.S. has confirmed that it's holding back $800 million in aid. Well, this story is evolving rather quickly. Let's get in with our CNN's senior U.S. State Department producer, Elise Levitz, in Washington. Elise, the U.S. is certainly taking a strong stance.
Anna, yes, and that's one-third of all U.S. military and security assistance to Pakistan, doing it for a couple of reasons now. In part, it's a bit of pressure to the Pakistanis to do more to cooperate on terrorism. It's also a retaliation. After that raid against Osama bin Laden's compound in Abbottabad, Pakistanis threw out about 100 military trainers, and this is part retaliation for that, and it's partly because they threw out these trainers and because they're not allowing visas for U.S. personnel, that aid comes as a package deal with the personnel. And the U.S. is really saying to Pakistan right now, if you want us to pay, you have to play.
But is it likely that Pakistan will play, I guess, as you say, cooperate more so now that the U.S. has withdrawn this amount of aid?
I think that it's a calculated risk that U.S. officials say that they have to take. I mean, what's been happening is that the U.S. keeps continuing to give Pakistan aid upon aid, billions of dollars, and they're still not satisfied with the level of cooperation that Pakistan has given. But at the same time, as you say, it is a risk. In the past, when the U.S. has withheld aid to Pakistan, it's been a problem, and the relationship has really plummeted. But right now, the relationship between U.S. and Pakistan has been very bad. There's a lot of pressure with the U.S. Congress right now withhold some of the aid. And so I think that the U.S. said that we really need to get tough with the Pakistanis right now, and they're hoping that things will turn around.
Two quick notes on history mystery. See how the elites view the world in the globalist map room. That's from Don't Tread on Me. And presidential historians accused of stealing Maryland Museum documents. On to the media and memes, Sherwood Schwartz, the creator of Gilligan's Island and the Brady Bunch and tons more, dies at the age of 94. Wurtzel, Motorhead's guitarist and guitar tech, dies at the age of 61. And Rob Grill, the lead singer for the band The Grassroots, died at the age of 67. You might remember them from Midnight Confessions. Let's keep moving, shall we? Sorry, Grassroots. Mental Floss getting into the secrets of Disneyland, corpses, cats, and Club 33. And speaking of cats, I was going to play it, but I decided better of it. The Gregory Brothers return. The folks that brought you the viral videos of Double Rainbow and the Bed Intruder song are back with Can't Hug Every Cat. And it gets ugly as we move to murder and mayhem. California woman cut off husband's penis and put it in the disposal. A New York Ranger fan dies while trying to catch a foul ball. Brooklyn man admits to killing and dismembering lost boy. Washington court gives accused child rapist unlimited access to child porn in jail because he needs it because he's representing himself. And there's Brazil's magnetic boy attracting metal and attention.
An 11-year-old boy in Brazil is proving to be a real attraction, quite literally. Paulo David Amorim from the small town of Mossoro seems to be magnetic. Spoons, scissors, cameras, even saucepans managed to stick to his stomach, chest and back. Paulo's father told Brazilian TV he asked his son to bring him a knife and fork, and much to his surprise, they stuck to him. His doctor, though, says he's never seen anything like the case in 30 years in medicine, but the health of Paulo, who his friends have started calling Magnet Boy, is not at risk.
In our most recent murder and mayhem update, girlfriend of the Medicis big pharma company, the girlfriend of the Medicis CEO, found dead at his California mansion, foul play suspected. And on to Obama-Saya updates. Obama's 2012 re-election campaign takes in $86 million in the second quarter, trounces the GOP. Record Obama fundraiser rakes in grassroots support. Why don't you just eliminate the middleman and just send a check to Goldman Sachs? Comic Eddie Griffin tells the truth about the puppet Obama and the war machine. That clip is there for you. Betty Ford, former First Lady and founder of the famed Addiction Clinic, dies at the age of 93. Tributes poured in for the party girl and lifesaver. Meanwhile, Tennessee lawmaker gets in trouble for carving her initials in the desk on the House floor. Michelle Bachmann pledges to ban all forms of pornography. And Ron Paul will not seek House re-election. So that's an interesting point connected to the new Ron Paul campaign, which has released its first official video.
In the 80s, they did it to Reagan. A debt ceiling compromise. Democrats promising spending cuts, but delivering only tax hikes. The 90s brought more compromises, more broken promises, and more new taxes. This August, the next chapter will be written. A defining moment. $14 trillion in debt, millions unemployed, the dollar in decline. We know where they stand. But will our party's leaders repeat the mistakes of the past? Will they choose compromise or conviction? One candidate has always been true. Ron Paul. Cut spending. Balance the budget. No deals. Standing up to the Washington machine, guided by principle. Restore America now.
I'm Ron Paul, and I approve this message.
On to the Oregon oddities. Money! It's gotta be the shoes! Air Jordans play role in landing Oregon recruit, and Nike's involvement in the slimy Oregon recruiting scandal wearing thin, both of those stories from the Seattle Times. Meanwhile, Mitt Romney quietly hits Portland for a closed-door fundraiser, checks in, and cashes out. And an interesting story that caught my eye in the Oregonian, Portland to review immigration center plans. And we do have a clip for that, but now we totally don't have time, really, for any more clips, unfortunately. Portland Charter School felt pressured to keep quiet about ICE plans. So, basically, they want to build an immigration customs enforcement facility that would basically be a jail processing people right next to a school. And they don't want to tell anybody about it, but fortunately, Jack Bogdansky of the jackblog.org here in Oregon posted the plans and got in trouble, but now the story's out and it's forced it into the open, and now there's going to be discussions about it. Meanwhile, grocery store screens 1,600 plus applicants for 100 plus jobs, as for some reason people keep coming to Portland even though there's no work for anybody here. And there was a great op-ed in the Oregonian that I tweeted out, and it went all over the place, retweeted, Video Game Addiction, A Nation Watches as Its Youth Turn Into Zombies. And it's written by a young guy and a former video game addict who notes, it hasn't turned our kids into a nation of serial killers, it's turned them into a nation of zombies. Our police state updates, mayor claims Quartzsite, Arizona under martial law after state of emergency declared during secret meeting. Mayor Foster comments on that emergency in Quartzsite, denies martial law, and we've been following the story and asking the question now for a couple of months, what on earth is going on in Quartzsite, Arizona? Alternate asking, why do the police have tanks? The strange and dangerous militarization of the U.S. police force. Stun gun found in Boston to Newark jet after arrival. Mom jailed for raging on TSA agents over her daughter's pat-down. Didn't want the girl's crotch grabbed. Citing secret order, federal court dismisses airline passenger lawsuit against DHS and the TSA over the scanners, over the virtual strip searches, and over the full-body rubdowns. Meanwhile, a TSA agent was caught with a passenger's iPad in his pants and allegedly took $50,000 worth of other goods. The last clip I was going to play for you, you must check out for yourself from Raw Story. CNN exposes their own terror expert as a fraud, and it smells to me like it connects to Israeli spy rings. But that's just me. Our War Horse headlines, yes we can, U.S. using strategic bombers over Libya. William Lynn, we reported for you, now stepping down. He's done his work cramming the cybercom down your tubes. And we'll remind you that, one, the new Secretary of Defense, Panetta, who just came over from the CIA, who's a Clinton guy, who blamed Iraq for 9/11 earlier, he also says that al-Qaeda's defeat is within reach. Blackwater's new director, Bill Clinton's lawyer, and new Brown University report pegs the real cost of the current wars at $4 trillion and counting, but really, it's mission accomplished, as troops in Afghanistan are going home to Canada. And finally, West Virginia worry. Acting West Virginia Governor Earl Ray Tomlin orders emergency fracking regulations, and American Power Company puts on hold their carbon capture project in West Virginia, and the Mon Fayette Expressway opens, gutting my hometown in Fayette County, West Virginia, and Senator Joe Manchin made a tour of the Eastern Panhandle, where I spent the previous 10 years to move into Portland, talking defense and debt in the Dirtyburg, Martinsburg, and then he visited Shepherdstown, my college town, to talk theater and the arts with the Contemporary American Theater Festival, where I worked as a sound designer for a couple of years, and that's where I learned how to do radio, and then I switched it into media monarchy. My friends, thank you so much for everything. Next week, we will not be broadcasting live on the Portland Radio Authority because the PDX Pop Now Festival will be simulcast and broadcast live on praradio.org. So we're going to do a little experiment, and we're going to broadcast from home, and you can hear it on Ustream, and you'll be able to get it through zeropointradio.com. My name is James Evan Pilato, your host and webmaster of the site and show MediaMonarchy.com. It's July 15th, 2011. This has been the 225th episode. And as always, my friends, like Jello Biafra said, don't hate the media, become the media. Take care.
MediaMonarchy.com is your source for alternative news, politics, conspiracies, and cover-ups. Featuring weekly radio shows on the Portland Radio Authority, PRAradio.org, the World Next Week video series with CorbettReport.com, plus special interview episodes, B-sides, mixtapes, and so much more. Send news tips to MediaMonarchy@gmail.com. You can make a donation or mail Media to the Monarchy at P.O. Box 12165, Portland, Oregon 97212. Thanks to all the internet and community radio stations who broadcast these shows, and most of all, thanks to you. Remember, don't hate the media, become the media.
Whether he went on with the diary, or whether he did not cooperate, made no difference. The thought police would get him just the same.